Siren Radio.
Yes, I know. It is time for the weather forecast for Lincoln, England, from Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is quite cold. You've got highs of 2 degrees centigrade, lows of minus 1 degree centigrade, and it will be a day of sunny intervals and gentle breezes.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Emma Street. Last week, when Phil Leonis was actually online from Los Angeles, we had to report that Gabriella Peralta wasn't able to join us because she was on a plane.
I know.
Shall we find out what kind of plane she was actually on, where she was going, and what sort of things she was doing on that plane, rather than actually keeping her fans in Lincoln, England, happy?
I went to London and I watched Harry Potter in theatre.
As you do.
That's your trip to Lincoln.
It just crossed my mind. Yeah.
Only 2 hours on the train.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. I used to take that train. I did think of it, but...
Quickly dismissed it.
I just didn't.
Well, Harry Potter took priority.
Harry Potter. It's a whole day, two parts.
So was it worth the journey, Gabriella?
Well... I went with my boyfriend, who's a massive Harry Potter fan, for his birthday, he loved it.
Yes. I'm getting the sense of you, not so much, really. Yeah, it's
two
a case.
Parts of Harry Potter is just way too long. Like, J.K. Rowling, cut out half of it. Just have one. Yeah, just have one part, like every other theatre show.
Yeah,
it's where the money lies there, I think that's why.
I know, it just felt like such a money grab, to be honest, when I was there. You go there, you're made to wait half an hour in the foyer just so you can buy extra
confectionery.
Wands and,
Did you buy a wand, Gabriella?
No, I did not buy a wand. I was smart to their tactics. They didn't let you sit for about half an hour.
Did you not buy a Frodo wand?
No. He doesn't have a thumb, he can't use a wand.
He must have a costume, Harry Potter costume.
Yes,
we need to get him one.
But he's got paws, Ben. No. He doesn't have opposable thumbs.
It doesn't matter. You make these things happen.
Magic.
Santa doesn't have paws either, but you're still living with Santa outfit.
That's true.
Yes, and apart from the fact that it was twice as long as it should have been, you were kept waiting whilst they tried to tempt you with wands and so on. Was it a worthwhile journey?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it, even though I complain. It was still good. The staging's amazing. I don't want to ruin it for anyone who wants to go watch it. It's got some really cool effects on it. You do have like kind of even magic tricks as such. So who would have thought in a magic show? But it is really entertaining. Just if you're not a hardcore Harry Potter fan, you might find over 5 hours in the theatre
excessive.
Much. Yeah.
Hannah Brown might like She would have been well all over.
In fact, she should have swapped tickets with Hannah, actually. She probably would have gone. Already seen it 10 or 11 times.
Oh, she probably knows all the script.
Consecutively, yeah. It's great. Funny enough, we might have to speak to Hannah again. So there we are. At the New Theatre Royal, this coming Sunday, we have the excitement of... Lord of the Dance. It's
Harry Potter.
For a moment, I was thinking, no, it isn't Harry Potter. It's dance, and indeed, Spirit of the Dance that's taking place on the 3rd of February, and hopefully, Kira will be one of our folk who'll be going along to actually visit that. Bethany, I think, probably will take over as well. Obviously, Emma and Ben, you had the opportunities, but.
My mum's birthday on the 3rd, so...
And I feel like it'd be a wasted ticket for me.
It's the International Smash Hit Show celebrating its record-breaking 20th anniversary as the most successful dance show ever. So there we are.
I could take my mum, but I just...
Well, negotiate with Kira. I mean, she's not here, so you can make a decision arbitrarily on that basis.
Yeah.
Make a decision. That's all we will say. Richard Fitzwilliams has got a lot to talk about. When has he not got a lot to talk about? What about the joys of Frodo? Is he or is he not conscious, Gabriella?
Oh, he's awake this morning. I had to wake him up because he wants to sleep in, but, kind of moved him awake. So same happened last night with his walk. didn't want to walk either, so I had to gently kind of
nudge.
Push him, nudge him awake. He's very well rested, that's for sure.
I hope he realises and appreciates just the amount of stuff that you actually put together just to kind of keep him, you know, functioning on that sort of basis, which is very important. Ben, any questions you'd like to put to Gabriella?
Yeah, is there any goings on the Gibraltar Chronicle that we must know about over in Lincoln, England?
Oh, okay, in the Gibraltar Chronicle, what's going on? Mm. You know, not to spoil it, but Brexit, the same as what's happening in the UK. That's the main things that's going on. Yesterday we had the launch of the Young Enterprise, the students that they launched their little businesses. So I went to that last night. And some funky, cool businesses, a lot of environmental ones. We saw anything from bamboo straws to biodegradable bags. So people, seems like the youth were really kind of pushing that environmental edge. But there were also other ones like phone charging cables and things that they were just trying to sell off, and books as well. So
did they have any wands for sale at all?
They had no wands, because I think J.K. Rowling has that entire market of wands. Practically. She has that sorted.
She is Delbert.
It's a wandopoly.
She's not a billionaire for nothing. That's what I noticed when I walked in there. I said, J.K. Rowling's rich because of a big reason. Let's face it. Yeah.
Well, once again, Gabrielle, I think that incisiveness makes you out as one of the Gibraltar Chronicle's finest ever reporters. The fact that you say J.K. Rowling is rich, you know, she's not running this thing for nothing. It's very good. Marvellous.
Yeah.
But hopefully she doesn't exploit the people, because on that sort of basis, you know, I can't believe that Hogwarts would ever sort of exploit people. I mean, it's far too much to actually consider. Okay, let's go for the last two questions, please. Emma.
Oh, lost my voice.
I know, we're all losing our voices. Yeah, we will actually be using subtitles by the end of the show. Never mind.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the show today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Next week for sure.
My life, I'm running around with my
Yes, we do want to feel like this for the rest of our life because it is 12 and a half, wait, so it's nearly 13 minutes past 8 o'clock. 13 minutes past 8 o'clock in the UK time, Greenwich Mean Time, as far as Lincoln, England is concerned. Probably the same time in London, England, isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, yes. I mean, having seen the glorious Dior exhibition preview at the Victoria and Albert Museum yesterday, I have to say it could be any time. When you see beauty like that, whether it's from a genius like that and the creative directors who followed him, it's timeless.
I noticed that you'd actually been out and about once again, Richard. I mean, not just with respect to CNN, but other folk as well from that point of view. So, you know, quite astounding, you know, in full force. Ben, did you notice Richard has also been out and about?
Indeed, yes. I did indeed. Many television interviews, Richard.
Well, I mean, I have to say, it's you know, London is full of such fun and there's so many interesting projects. But there's one thing, I mean, I have to say, I regret to say this, because I went the out and about, you're also referring probably to Westminster Abbey, where I was reviewing the excellent Diamond Jubilee galleries, which are very fine, and I recommend them to anyone.
And the death effigy of Henry the VII, of course.
Absolutely, yes. So that is interesting, and of course with his links to Richard the Third and the debate and controversy there. But I will also mention, I couldn't take a photograph of it, but there is a window in Westminster Abbey as you come in on the right-hand side, which commemorates the Queen's love of the countryside, and is by David Hockney. I greatly admire Hockney, and some of his portraits I think are iconic, and indeed a fascinating artist who's always continued to experiment, as we know, but this does not go in the Abbey. It's a childlike country scene. The colours jar with the surroundings, and I have to say that it's in front of a collection of Victorian statesmen, and I would love to hear Gladstone and Disraeli come alive because their statues are directly opposite this mistake and say what they think of this.
So is there, in a kind of contemporary sense, any indication within this work of great art, Richard, of a Land Rover being driven by a driver who isn't wearing a seatbelt, who's possibly crashing into something? Is that present at all, just to kind of keep it really current and up to date?
That is a very interesting point, because if you look at the shapes and the way they move across the stained glass, I have to say that I can't quite entertain conjecture of a time when they could be construed as quite symbolic of strange and weird accidents and behaviour, but it's a very relevant point that one must bear in mind whilst looking at this thing, because if you think of that, at least you're thinking of something that happened, whereas I have to say it's a childlike work, but it's far, far too large. And the other point, I'm really serious here, when visitors come to the Abbey, they come through the door, and it's directly or almost directly on their right, and this is a mistake. I'm not against experiment of all sorts, so you have to be careful whether it's Edinburgh Cathedral or whether it's Notre Dame or whether it's Westminster Abbey. They've all done or had experiments with stained glass windows in contemporary style, and mostly they're absolutely brilliant. This is a blot on the escutcheon, and I am serious. Indeed, I need to escape for aesthetic reasons.
Is it a carbuncle?
Frankly, it is, and I think it's a great, great pity, because you do want something, however striking, however much it is of our time, and also Hockney's eminence. I'm not questioning that. What the point is that it's it looks as if they've had a children's competition, and they've got something that is huge. I mean, this is the problem. Mm-hmm. You've got something huge that will strike visitors, and it jars with the with what is around it, and it's frankly a failure, and I'm just writing a review of it. It is a really, really
sounds
great
like
shame.
It could be a damning review. Unlike
exhibitions come and go, but I mean, incidentally, just to mention that in Dior, you've got another new gallery at the Victoria and Albert Museum, but my goodness me, as fascinating, I wasn't aware that Dior's first exhibition in 1947, it's quite extraordinary. If you're such a meteoric success that within 4 years you create the a special gown for the Princess Margaret's 21st, within 4 years, he makes his name. I mean, it's quite staggering. And then Cecil Beaton photographs it. That was a specific interview I was doing for German television. And, I mean, it's part of the exhibition. But, I mean, you've got the most glorious creations. And you've got this, as he tragically died of a heart attack at 52. There have been 6 creative directors of Dior. And, I mean, they've all taken, including Galliano. The house continued its name and its influence. It really is stunning. But to see an exhibition as lavish as this and as beautifully curated as this, and especially with 2 of the things that inspired Dior, the garden and also the period of the Belle Epoque, I can only just say, wow. I mean, this is extraordinary. And if you love this sort of thing, don't miss it.
And with a slight momentary break from the front cover of Private Eye magazine, you'll be delighted to know, Richard, to note that Emma Street will be portraying the character, portraying the speech bubble of Her Majesty the Queen, whilst Ben Lewis will actually be portraying the character of the speech bubble of, obviously, Prince Philip. So I hope...
What are they saying?
Just to clarify, the front cover of Private Eye, that is...
This is the front cover, exactly, of Private Eye. So, Emma, if you'd like to channel your inner royalty and deliver this particular piece for our royal correspondent, apropos of obviously said incident in Sandringham.
I don't have to put on a voice or anything.
Whatever you feel.
Okay.
Whatever you feel. Carry on.
Still at the wheel, refusing to apologise, learnt nothing, won't belt up.
She's your Prime Minister,
was the response by Prince Philip.
I need to do in a Hugh Dennis sort of way, doesn't it? It needs to be one of those rounds on Mock the Week.
It's a work in progress. It's a work in progress. But
I would incidentally point out, regarding the letter that he apparently did send to Emma Fairweather, it's rather strange. It's dated the 21st and was supposedly hand-delivered on the 23rd, according to the Daily Mail. If for some reason it took nearly a week to come to light... but it has, anyway, apparently calmed the controversy down. And he won't be seen without a seatbelt.
I'm sorry. You know, it's still.
Well, I mean, that was badly handled.
It could have brought down the government, Richard. Could have brought down the government.
That is a topic. I mean, I wouldn't even dare begin. And it's like the Streswick-Holstein question. You remember, it was so complicated, the European dispute, that only 3 people understood it. All were professors. One went mad, one was dead, and one had forgotten it.
That says so much about life in the 21st century. But I'm pleased we managed to at least address the issue, because for the last few weeks people have been saying, so what do you think Richard Fitzwilliams makes of all this Prince Philip malarkey?
Oh, no, but there's absolutely no question that, firstly, we were thankful that, obviously, our most revered, so to speak, or elder figure in the country had escaped without injury, and even if he had to be helped out of his car on the circumstances, it seemed pretty ghastly, and also that there'd been no injury that was desperately serious to the 2 women and the child who were in the other car involved, and precisely what the circumstances were appeared to be clouded by the question that it was possibly sunlight or whatever, and then, well... If you get a new Land Rover the next day and then you're seen without a seatbelt, even at 97, I'm afraid, popular opinion, it was pretty strong that this was a misbehaviour of...
Emma, your father's a chauffeur. Would he be annoyed about that? Would he sort of think, well, I have to wear a seatbelt?
Yeah.
In fact, why isn't a chauffeur for Prince Philip?
It's against the law. It's not just a question of being annoyed about it. It's a question you've got to. In the estate, he can do what he likes. I mean, I'm sure he's driving away now. There's no question about it. Say it's precious for him.
Round and round.
Well, persons of advanced age, I mean, you know, they do hang on to the pieces of independence they have. And
Tell me about it, Richard. You know, that's what I do on a daily basis.
The problem was that although there was some dispute as to where she, that they'd attempted to contact her, and there'd been a message and so forth, and also the business, if you apologise,
insurance,
to what extent that it has some
admit liability, never say anything, deny everything.
You never apologise, said John Wayne, and she wore a yellow ribbon.
Exactly.
It's a sign of weakness. But this has not been well handled, there's no question about that.
Although I guess the alternative for this is, if he buy him a black cab and get him a black cab licence, then he can drive around without his seatbelt on.
There you are.
Well, now, there is a solution that I suggest. I can only suggest that you put that suggested into
change,
the
change your vehicle. Go over
it. It could be on points of view, I'm sure. Exactly. They'll accept that.
Ben, should you pursue the notion of the mule, or shall we ask Richard to go down the line of vice?
Which would Richard like to do first?
I think we ought to do vice first.
It is Batman. It's Christian Bale putting on weight as Dick Cheney. Yay!
It is a very, very impressive performance. He's put on weight and inhabits the role. And I do have to say that, I mean, it's absolutely certain now that Rami Malek is going to win his turn as star turn as Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody. But before reviewing Vice, I would like to make a really, really serious point about the SAG Awards, which occurred on Sunday. And, I mean, the Black Panther won, good luck to it, a superhero movie that's broken all box office records and indeed been recognized. And it had an ensemble cast, which was fabulous. So did Crazy Rich Asians, I have to say. Bohemian Rhapsody did not have an ensemble. It had one top performance, and Tom Holland was very good as a manager, but certainly Mike Myers didn't shine in that role. I have to say that it's a very, very curious selection when you leave out a film like The Favourite and also Green Book. One has three nominations, one has two nominations, all are acting nominations.
Green Book is far too politically hot these days with respect to its topic. You need to actually focus on the notions of Black Panther for a much more sort of suitable and appropriate take on contemporary events.
Well, that is very, very questionable, I have to say, because Green Book is, well, I mean, the theme of Green Book, good gracious, we've seen so many movies condemning and examining the horrors of racism, especially in the Deep South. The thing with Green Book is that it's a very unusual take on it, but also I'm talking about ensemble casts. What I'm saying is that Bohemian Rhapsody shouldn't, as the SAGs have just acting awards, they represent 15% of 1,300 of the 8,000 Academy voters. It's up from just under 6,000 several years ago, so it's a very, very substantial number. And they have a best cast, best actor, best actress, best supporting and actor and actress. The best cast, despite three nominations for Olivia Colman, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, the favorite it wasn't even in contention. And as for A Star is Born, which I saw for a second time yesterday and loved, I mean, I think its chances have all but vanished because, again, it was...
It's extinguished. It's become less of a star, more kind of fading white dwarf, effectively.
I'm afraid, well, that's an extraordinary, extraordinary metaphor for it, but it has faded, yes. And, I mean, Black Klansman was also nominated. I mean, we know that Glenn Close is now going to win Best Actress. She shouldn't. I mean, quite honestly, Lady Gaga should or Olivia Colman should. It's an award for 45 years of being...
Non-stop bunny boiling from Fatal Attraction onwards.
How right you are, but the point is that is not the reason. This is the way they used to avoid to award Oscar gongs, and they really, really shouldn't. Mm. It's not a concert. It's a consolation prize for having not having won before. The film, The Wife, is really feeble, but nonetheless, she's going to win. Rami Malek, yes, absolutely, is going to be Christian Bale. Mahershala Ali has already got it for Green Book.
Well, at least we don't have to watch the ceremony then, apart from the occasional frock that might be out there, so fair enough.
Well, then, Regina King, no nomination, so, she will win at the Oscars. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Emily Blunt, however, did brilliantly. Two nominations, and good luck to her.
Where did we start the campaign to get Emily Blunt some recognition? I mean, Ben, you'll acknowledge Mary Poppins.
Yes, I know, yes. You're a firm supporter of
exactly.
her.
Exactly.
I am, too. I think she's wonderful as Mary Poppins and Returns, and also... Yes, A Quiet Place.
But is she as good as Amy Adams, as Vice President Cheney, Dick, his
wife? The answer, frankly, I've got to be frank, absolutely not. I would have given it to Amy Adams.
There we are.
I mean, it's true, Lynn Cheney, and here we come. It brings us nicely into Vice, Alex. So, I mean, it deals with the former President of the United States, Dick Cheney. And I ask this question.
He became the most powerful man in the world as Vice President George W. Bush.
I think that the film's premise is absolutely right, and I think, though there are flaws in this movie, the facts are that if you want to see an unconventional hatchet job on somebody who was undoubtedly a monster, this is a very good movie to enjoy. I mean, has he got a heart? There's so many heart attacks during the film. He apparently had more than the film shows. And the narrator, who has a curious device this, but it's a very curious movie, Kurt is a fictitious veteran of the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts. Well, the Cheney and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, played by Steve Carell, fatefully initiate, which leads to the rise of Islamic State terrorism. And Kurt's heart is transplanted into Cheney's, which, quite frankly, is a pretty strange device. But I do have to say, I went to a Q&A with the director, Adam McKay, where he asserted that if Cheney saw this movie, he'd love it. The family would hate it.
Well, there we are, you see. That's the important thing. We're going to take a short momentary musical break, which is to gather our thoughts together and bearing in mind, obviously, heart transplants, very much a thing of science fiction back in the day. Now, of course, they're so regular. Even, as I say, Dick Cheney, they're used as plot devices in so many marvellous ways. The man, of course, who changed the globe in ways that we still feel today. Here's the musical break.
There's a certain sound always follows me around. When you're close to me, you will hear it. It's the sound that lovers hear when they discover they're
planning the wedding of Lily Holloman and Phil Lynas, I'd actually have probably Dean Haglund sing the Andy Williams Happy Heart song, at least do a kind of voice application to it, whilst dressed totally in white and coming down a large staircase, and probably with Dick Cheney images in the background as well, because he always had a happy heart, as you'd expect. Moving on from one perfectly formed actor to another in the shape of Clint Eastwood, actor, director,
of course. Oh, wait a second. I haven't finished reviewing Vice because it really, there are a couple of points I wanted to make. Charting your rise from an alcoholic construction worker to be, as you say, the right-hand man of George W. Bush. There's a very good performance by Sam Rockwell. Remember him in Three Billboards as George W. as W. And he's only too pleased to give Cheney the responsibilities which he wanted. So, of course, you get power there. I just wanted to explain to listeners that Cheney was... He was there. He was pretty secretive.
He was Dick Cheney, let's face it.
He was Dick Cheney, and behind him was the ambitious wife, Lynn. And this brings us to a superb Amy Adams, because really, really, you've got the pop performance that should have won at the SAGs, in my opinion, because really they became the ultimate power couple in the world's only superpower. And this is an absolute hatchet job. And I just also wanted to mention the, because I mean the structure of the film is just extraordinary. I mean, it's a zany farce. It uses documentary footage.
Richard, it sounds as though I've got one of those horrendous decisions to make. Do I this weekend check out The Joys of Vice, or do I go and see The Lego Movie 2?
Well, I would suggest that Vice was worth seeing.
Yeah, but Vice doesn't have Will Arnett's Lego Batman in, you see. So, then on the other hand, it has got Christian Bale as the original Batman. So,
Bale is absolutely extraordinary though in this role, because Bale as you've never seen him before, and he looks exactly like Chaney. But if you want to see very unconventional filming, for example, I mean, the credits start rolling halfway through the film, this sort of thing. I mean, one of the problems with the movie, one does have to mention this, that the sheer ferocity of its assault, where you have a fourth wall technique at the end with Chaney addressing...
It's Deadpool, isn't it? Deadpool for American presidents.
You certainly get... I mean, you don't feel sorry for someone who unquestionably, I'm not questioning the film's premise at all, but what I am saying is that it is a little unrelenting, but then with some purpose. I thought it was very good.
But it doesn't look as though it's persuaded Ben or Emma to go and see it. Ben, you were not impressed. I mean,
I don't know about not impressed. I'd say it's okay. I'd give it a watch.
You'd give it a watch.
But I wouldn't be lining outside the Odeon on the Brave Waterfront of Lincoln to go and watch it in a rush. Right, do you know what I mean? So,
Emma?
I think I'll go watch it. I like Amy Adams, and I think she's a great actress, so I'd like to see her in it.
A 90-year-old horticultural and Korean War veteran is caught transporting $3 million worth of cocaine through Illinois for a Mexican drug cartel. Is it another adventure of Prince Philip? No.
you're really in good form today, if I have to say. I mean, the odd thing with this wonderful movie directed by Clint Eastwood, he also shows what those of advanced years can get up to. It's in the same couple of months as we saw Robert Redford bow out in The Old Man and the Gun, where he played Forrest Tucker, the wonderfully charming bank robber of an advanced age. And this is also a true, based on a true story. It deals with Earl Stone, a 90-year-old horticulturist and Korean War veteran, estranged from his family. He needs money, and he becomes a mule transporting coke through Illinois for a Mexican drug cartel. And of course, he's elderly, he's white, he's an ex-veteran, he's the least likely person to arouse suspicion, so he takes larger and larger loads because it's so successful. Now, there are a couple, and this is one of the aspects of this movie, it just shows Eastwood hasn't lost his touch. Initially, the first couple of scenes, I was a little puzzled, he didn't seem to have age much in the 12-year jump, and I thought it might be like Gran Torino, which, quite frankly, I thought rather weak. But it is a marvelous movie. I really recommend it. You'll find him as a horticulturist, naturally, tending to flowers in the first scene, and in fact, the allotment seems remarkably neat. I was wondering, it hardly went with the story where he's bankrupt and he's not got a place to live in except in his van, and money starts pouring in through very unconventional means. But what's been going on? All is explained, but this is a movie. One of the things I like about it is there are a really good couple of twists in it. One of them is visual, and one of them is the way Eastwood decides to tell the story. I thought he was marvellous. I thought it was visually. It's a road movie with a difference. He's always on the road with all this, all these drugs and the police. Here we have Bradley Cooper appearing, always extremely good, as Colin Bates, agent who tries to track him, and also his superior, played by the ever-reliable and delightful Lawrence Fishburne. Michael Penner as well, as another agent. And Andy Garcia is a cartel boss who has a surprise coming to him. This is a delight as a movie. And, I mean, if you think back at Eastwood's remarkable filmography, I mean, the quirky movies like this, haven't he given us The Unforgiven, Letters from Iwo Jima, Million Dollar Baby, The Changeling, Invictus, American Sniper, something controversial.
Fistful of Dollars, Where Eagles Dare.
Oh, he was involved in that terrible movie, I Like the Guns I Never Owned, not Where Eagles Dare, but it's assumed a certain cult status, and the book has just been written about it.
Exactly.
Don't dish the
Dirty Harry either, you know, let's not forget Dirty Harry. Do you feel lucky, punk?
There is no question at all that he's left his mark on cinema, and I think the Mule is an absolute delight. He directs, he acts exceptionally well, and under all the frailty and the fact that, you know, he is of advanced years, nonetheless, there's a certain sense of humour, and there's the fact he's all there, and his behaviour, however unconventional, the police do start closing in, the cartel starts to change, interesting things happen. I thought that this was Eastwood on top class form. I'm looking to see. He's not young, but what's he going to get up to next?
Emma, will you be checking out Clint Eastwood's The Mule?
Yeah, well, I think that's really sold it for me. It looks really interesting.
Ben?
Yeah, it reminds me slightly of Harry Brown, the film of Harry Brown with Michael Caine. Sort of an innocent older man who's actually not so innocent.
I have to say, I wasn't very fond of Harry Brown, but Michael Caine put in a good turn, and Caine is a marvellous performer, and Eastwood, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you'll find it fascinating, and with this and The Old Man and the Gun, I mean, they're both excellent movies, and they're both based on true stories, and both worth checking out, and I was impressed with it, too, and also, as I say, a twist or two to keep us, it sustains the tension. What happens to him?
Emma, would you like to find out what's going to happen to Richard Fitzwilliams after you ask him those last two questions?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the show today?
I have indeed.
And will you be joining us next week?
Most certainly.
Frankly, over the years, we've been consistently banging on about the importance of good health, good nutrition, and indeed, of course, the benefits of eating oily fish, or indeed, actually, at least ensuring that you're getting your omega fish oils together. But it seems that still people are confused when it comes to which fish are highest in omega-3, what's the difference between oily fish, why should we eat fish, what's the point of fish, in all sorts of ways. So we're going to bring in the absolute, the gangbusters here, the super heroine when it comes to nutrition, more than just the Jamie Oliver of nutrition. She is actually the number one person in her field. It's Sarah Ann Macklin. How are you, Sarah?
Hi, I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Well, as we said, we can't mess around with this anymore, really. I mean, it's clearly a case of people are still confused, specifically in the East Midlands. Almost a third of people can't name any oily fish from an NHS list that includes herring, salmon and mackerel.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what the Aug Science and Wellbeing latest survey found. And that's quite worrying because the National Diet and Nutrition Survey also found, you know, that we're not eating enough oily fish. We're recommended to eat 140 grams a week of oily fish, which is one portion, and then one portion of non-oily fish. And at the moment, from the survey, they found, you know, we're only eating it once every 6 weeks, which is much lower than the recommended daily guidelines. Yeah.
And if you add to that the fact that people are actually suggesting that cod is an oily fish, fish fingers, catfish, swordfish, prawns, we seem to have a huge gulf in our understanding and our awareness of what we need to be actually sort of taking to at least sort of keep ourselves going.
No, absolutely. So the fish highest in omega-3, we want to be looking at really oily fish. So this is things like mackerel, trout, herring, salmon and sardines. These are all the ones that we want to be aiming towards our oily portions of fish, which is once a week at 140 grams or more, if you can sneak that in. But any white fish or any fish that's not oily doesn't count in this omega-3 and one portion of oily fish a week, which is what we really need to be getting across and the message that we need to be relaying to everybody, really, so they can understand.
So what are the benefits of oily fish? I mean, it's all very well saying this is what we should be taking, but what are the kind of the plus factors in terms of our overall health?
So there's been a lot of research into omega-3s, and we've had a lot of supporting evidence for brain function, for heart health, such as cardiovascular disease. It's very important for pregnant women to eat during pregnancy to help the healthy brain and eye development of their unborn child. It's a very big anti-inflammatory, omega-3. It's also good for your skin and your hair and your nails. But what we know is that people from Greenland and the Mediterranean diet actually have a lower risk of heart disease than us in the Western countries because their intake is much more vast and it's much higher. So there's many benefits to eating oily fish and making sure you're consuming omega-3 in a supplement form if you don't eat oily fish, which is very important.
Which is indeed my next question, Sarah, because clearly there are folk who actually say, I can't possibly consume that amount of mackerel per week. It's just not right in any way, shape or form. Is it feasible to actually look at nutritional supplements to actually provide us with our essential dosages of omega-3?
Absolutely. So in my clinic, I have a range of clients that come in. You know, some are vegan, some are very heavily plant-based, some just don't like the taste of fish. And obviously, I love to recommend food as first, but if some people are opposed to eating it, then absolutely is when I would recommend a supplement. And the new Og supplement, which has just come out, actually, it is a great one because it's actually sourced from herring. So it's one of the higher omega-3 fishes. But what you want to do when you do source a supplement, just make sure you see a nutritionist regarding it. Then it's not detrimental to have an omega-3 supplement, and that's how you can add it into your diet if you don't want to eat fish. The only thing you do need to be aware of is if you are a vegan, a strict vegan, certain omega-3s are obviously not a vegan source because they're sourced from fish oil. So you'll just have to seek other alternatives, which there are out there as well, but it's just something you just need to be aware if you are a vegan.
And what about people who say, well, that's why we should still actually provide cod liver oil as a suitable dose, which apart from tasting quite horrendous, could also be a big question mark in itself?
Yeah, I mean, cod liver oil is, it does have many benefits, but it's not the same high substances of the EPA and the DHA, which is the specific compounds that we want to be looking for with an omega-3. And so when looking at an omega-3 supplement, make sure you're looking for that EPA and the DHA, which are the longer-chain omega-3 compounds, which have been found to be beneficial from all of these studies.
And the best place, Sarah, to go to find out further details about OG Science and indeed what we've been talking about today with respect to omega-3+.
Yes, exactly. So if you go to the website, which is www.ogwellbeing.com, or if you're into Instagram, then I know their handle is og_sciencefromourbeing. And you can find all the studies and more information on there regarding their latest national survey that they did.
Seems genuinely wonderful. Sarah Ann Macklin, nutritionist extraordinaire. Many thanks indeed. I'm sure we'll continue to speak as 2019 proceeds. Many thanks indeed.
Wonderful. Thanks, Alice. Have a good morning.
Ian Lennox, you always strike me as somebody who likes that oily fish. Is this true?
No, it's not actually. I don't eat nearly enough.
Oh, well, you see, you just heard Sarah Ann Macklin there talk about why you should be having some oily fish.
Well,
particularly mackerel and trout.
There's lots of things I should do and I don't, I'm afraid.
Well, you know,
something was wrong. Never mind. Yeah. But I did go and support Newcastle United this week.
Did you really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't imagine you would.
Well, I mean, I suppose 23rd time lucky, all being well.
Yes, I got it with 3 points out of 66. It's now points out of 69.
Well, there you are, you see. So clearly your Liverpool fans of Mike Ashley are quite happy to actually sort of work through that process. But there's only yourself and Emma who over the last 48 hours have actually had supporting teams that work, because Emma, of course, Tottenham Hotspur, sort of actually beat Watford.
Managed to pull it back in the end.
Which is more than obviously Newcastle managed in the FA Cup, because, of course, they're not interested in the FA Cup, because they're focusing on much more details. And Ben, of course, I mean, I tried to ease it last night, but you said, no, the pain of actually sort of losing 4-2 when you were 2-0 up.
I know, against Fulham. Well, it was at Craven Cottage, but that doesn't really say anything, does it, really? I mean,
It was a
shambolic game for Brighton. Absolutely horrendous game for Brighton. And
are you going to sack the boss, though?
Well, this is the thing. People were commenting after on social media, as they usually do, that he should be sacked. I think absolutely ludicrous, people.
Who's going to be sacked?
They want Houghton to be some of the fans. I was like, don't be so silly.
There should be a rule at the football grounds. As you enter, you get hit in the head with a hammer. If you blink, you don't get in.
It's just fake fans who know nothing and don't have any respect for people. You know, it's
no, they don't. They can't deal with disappointment, so they blame everything.
Oh, exactly. And you know, it's not like he's even doing bad. I mean, mid-table in the Premier League, you can't really complain, to be honest.
I suppose, again, there are issues such as, you know, in the spirit of the game, why did the referee have to actually call for the free kick to be taken again? There are all sorts of other issues.
No, that's the exact rules he followed there.
He's just a bit salty, Ian.
I'm sorry, we're not allowed to follow the rules when it doesn't go Manchester City's way.
Would you like some oily fish with that salty wound, Alex?
Oh, dear me.
We will have to, obviously.
Actually, it was a brilliant free kick, and there's only very few players that I thought in the Premier League could have made it like De Bruyne did. It was absolutely fantastic.
Exactly.
There's only one thing wrong with it.
Yes, anyway, apart from that, you know, clearly, let's not get started on penalties and all the rest of the
stuff. You're not happy at top of the league anymore, Alex?
Well, you know, at least Leicester managed to do something sane and proper last night, so that's all good. Ian, when do you actually go off to Marbella?
13th.
All right. Is Arthur prepped for this? Arthur McKenzie, is he prepped to actually step in once again?
Oh, I imagine he would be, yes. I haven't mentioned it to him.
I think you should, Ian. I think because obviously if we don't have a token Geordie on the programme, effectively the entire Lincoln support network actually collapses. Ian,
yes,
I know. You know, it is essential that, so, I mean, Emma would already be having panic attacks over the basis of, you know, if Ian Lennox is on holiday, who's going to be supporter? You know?
We need toys. It's like
You've obviously got my anonymous emails, have you?
Always.
The Geordie is that kind of... It's that little bit of paper that goes under a table leg that stops it wobbling.
Mm. Yeah.
Precisely. It's very critical on that.
That's just a shortened version of my emails, I'm afraid.
It's obviously it's transfer deadline day, as you may well be aware of.
Yes.
Is there anything in store? Do you know if there's anything we'll get the Harry Redknapp tips from
perhaps
you?
Perhaps Newcastle could put in a bid for Mo Salah. He's quite a useful player.
Maybe. Is there anyone you think you might see some surprise moves from today?
Well, we're just concentrating on getting the Paraguayan lad over the the line, I think.
Is that the first signing for Newcastle in the first 3 years?
On their own. Pardon?
First signing for Newcastle in 3 or 4 years, is it?
No. Goalkeeper. They're not Tottenham. Tottenham don't sign anybody.
Mind, we do think a lot before we sign anybody.
Well, you've got, I mean, how will he fit with HMV? How will he actually fit with other high street brands that are actually out there?
Well, I don't know. HMV is going to be dropped because he doesn't score enough goals. But they reckon this kid's got to go. He's fast. You can't tell, really. I'm watching on YouTube and things. He's pretty quick, left-footed, direct, goes past people. But that's in the American League, and you don't know how good or bad he is.
Look as though mid-table mediocrity is beckoning for Newcastle United with 24 English points.
Well, tell you what, the last 2 seasons, or 3 seasons, mid-table mediocrity is a goal for me.
Is that all right, okay. So Bournemouth obviously managing to do quite well against Chelsea last night with a 4-0 win. So
yes, that's extraordinary, wasn't it?
Oh, it is very
apparently
good.
The manager had the team in the dressing room for 40 minutes after the game, kicked all the coaches out. Yeah. And then admitted on television that he wasn't sure he could motivate the players, which is just like a resignation almost.
And yet they coped so well against the might of Sheffield Wednesday over the weekend. You know, it's phenomenal. Yeah, but there we are. It's just
3 points separating four teams in the bottom.
Yeah, team. I saw the bits of the game on highlights on Match of the Day last night, and didn't Chelsea have quite a few chances before in the first? It was nil at half time, I think. And Chelsea had, I think, had 3 or 4 really good chances, which they missed, which completely changed things. Now, if the referee had allowed De Bruyne's free kick, that could have changed everything, of course.
Exactly.
It was 0-0.
As he should have, but never mind.
That's very good.
Yeah, he should have just said, no, I'm sorry.
You've
broken the rules, but I just managed to say, let's turn a blind eye to that, eh?
You say broken the rules. They should be allowed to take the free kick when they want
There is a procedure, actually, where the referee goes over the player and raises his hand, apparently.
Yes.
And if he raises his hand, it means you go and take the free kick quickly. Mm. He's asked the player. He wants to take it quickly. He declined it. Then, such a brilliant play, he saw an opening and he put the ball in instinctively, I think.
Exactly.
Right. I don't agree with him getting booked, actually, because I think it wasn't you know, you see things. There's one lad got sent off for something in knockouts in one of the games, and there was a dreadful tackle where somebody in the halfway line went completely over the ball. He stood out, and he didn't even get booked. It's extraordinary.
End of the day, I'm afraid that Salomon Rondon and indeed Mr. Ritchie will not be receiving any Christmas cards from me whatsoever. So it's just
I wonder what they. I wonder how much.
Do they know what they're
how
doing?
How much gamesmanship was in the
that
penalty?
Do they know anybody but, you know, as far as the actual title is concerned? Still, never mind. Well, that's brought us neatly round to almost the end of the first part of the programme, which brings us neatly to 4 minutes to 9 o'clock, and we've got a brief news feature, and then we're into a whole range of things, including the delights of 2 in 5 British people rely on the inheritance and lottery wins for future financial stability. That's not a good situation to actually be in any way, shape or form.
I've just discovered why I don't win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
I never buy a ticket.
No, exactly. But you might sort of know, Ian, that actually top 5 dreams that men hang on to. Number 5, this is when you've passed your 30s, 40s and 50s. Indeed, almost 1 in 10 pensioners think they may yet become famous.
So, oh, really? Why do people want to be famous?
Well, many men over 50 think that they've got what it takes to
become... I'll tell you what, they should do a good documentary one day on telly, interviewing famous people about being famous. You find one of them who loves it, I'll be surprised. They hate it.
Well, according to this particular survey by Ultra, many men over 50 think that they've got what it takes to become famous as a stand-up comic. Ian Lennox.
They're having a laugh.
No humour. That's what it is, isn't it? In fact, there's a joke in that in itself, isn't there, really?
Totally.
Yes.
The top 5 dream jobs men hang on to all the way. Rock star number 5, comedian number 4, professional footballer number 3, a doctor, a lawyer, or accountant number 2, and number 1, pop star or vocalist.
Right.
Last 2 questions for Ian, please. Ben.
Ian, have you enjoyed your tenorful and interval study on the show?
I always do when Newcastle beat Man City.
That's the same of all of us. 2030s,
though, obviously. I've never experienced it before, but I am enjoying it.
And will you be joining us again in 20 years' time when they beat them again next?
Mm. Yes.
Wonderful.
I'll come back from the grave.
Radio.
And the weather today for Lincoln will be as follows. There'll be a high of 2 degrees centigrade. There'll be a low of minus 1 degree centigrade. But it will be a day of sunny intervals with a gentle breeze.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk. Picked up the silver medal Smarties Prize for Tadpole's Promise, then the Nason Special Needs Award for Susan Laughs, the Sheffield Children's Book Award for Who's in the Loo, and the Red House Children's Book Award for Bottoms Up. You're clearly the go-to person when it comes to contemporary fairy tales, and indeed a fairy tale for the digital age, specifically hashtag Goldilocks. Now, to actually talk about this and more factors with respect to how we can actually, in National Storytelling Week, start highlighting digital safety and well-being concerns, two fabulous individuals. First of all, the award-winning children's author extraordinaire, that's the fabulous Jean Willis. How are you, Jean?
I'm very well,
thank you.
Brilliant. And from the Vodafone Foundation, trustee, and indeed General Counsel and External Affairs Director of Vodafone UK, that would be Helen Lamprell. How are you, Helen?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Jean, if we can come to you first, hashtag Goldilocks, this particular story about Goldilocks actually getting into trouble because she's looking for likes on social media.
Mm-hmm.
What's it all about? I mean, apart from, I mean, is it a case of, I mean, is it another piece of our traditional childhood which I think you're digitising it, it's just too much?
Well, yes, I suppose I realise that so many children were going online, you know, even when they were babies, you can actually buy little sort of pieces of equipment to put pads in there so that they can look at them as they're going along in their pram. So I thought it was high time that somebody wrote a picture book that sort of covered internet safety. And Goldilocks seemed a very good one to work with because she was a bit naughty.
Now, clearly, the original traditional Goldilocks, she's looking for something which is not too hot, not too warm, just right. Poets, porridge, beds, various other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
What's the approach you take with respect to social media and likes?
I'm sorry.
What's the approach that you actually have taken with respect to the social media side of things? Have you adopted a similar pattern, or is it just a case of, no, it's just the Goldilocks character, that's all?
Oh, no. The whole point of doing this was I'd already done a couple of books about internet safety on sort of other subjects, and I realised lots of teachers were asking me to do one about sort of taking selfies and oversharing because kids were not realising that the information was going to be, you know, there forever.
Digital parenting, of course, is funded by the Vodafone Foundation.
That's right.
Helen, if I can turn to you for a few moments. You know, clearly, this could only help in terms of actually raising that awareness. And, of course, being acknowledgement of the fact that you know, anything that's published out there does actually remain pretty much as a digital footprint.
Absolutely. And I think what we saw in our research was that children are aware of social media at a much younger age than I think we had anticipated. So we really liked the idea of working with Jean, having seen her other books, which, you know, absolutely brilliant, because this allows people, parents, to have a conversation with their children at that point in their lives where you're doing it through a medium that's familiar to them. I think the illustrations in the book are absolutely awesome as well, and Jean's writing is beautiful. And it just allows parents to have that conversation with their children in a way that the children can relate to.
Almost half of children are aware of social media by the age of 7. Do you think the genie is very much out of the box, that effectively we'll be pretty much heading to a time shortly where it'll be a case of, yeah, if you're not wired up by the time you're actually gestating in the womb, then frankly you're just too late?
I think people use social media in lots of different ways, and some of it is absolutely awesome. I mean, my daughter taught herself gymnastics moves off YouTube, which was slightly scary to watch as a parent, but actually a really great use of the technology. But we all know that these things have their downsides too, so I think it's about facing into that and dealing with it, and I think that's what the hashtag Goldilocks book allows us to do.
Jean, Helen mentioned the importance of illustrations there, and clearly a picture is worth 1,000 words. Presuming you'd like to acknowledge the illustrations on the work as well.
Oh, yes. Well, I've been working with Tony Ross for, I think, about 30 years now. It might even be longer than that. And he's my sort of go-to guy, really. He understands children very well. He's got lots of them himself. And there's always so much humour in his picture books, which helps when you're getting messages across. You know, you don't have to hit people with a hammer.
And clearly, having been part of the pre-digital revolution, and an era where we didn't have the Instagram, the hashtag, whatever, basically, do you ever sort of hanker back for those days, or do you think actually, again, we need to acknowledge that the 21st century, with its digital revolution, pretty much is changing our lives, whether we like it or not?
Well, I'm sort of caught between two stools because as an author, I sort of rejected all this sort of modern technology for ages, but it makes my job so much easier. What I am slightly concerned about is when I become a grandparent, I'm not really au fait with it, what the children are up to these days. So actually, it was a really great opportunity for me personally, as well as other parents, to get in touch with, well, for Vodafone to sort of use this book, because when I went to their website, I learned stuff I had no idea about, and it was very helpful for me as well. So I'm sure it's going to be a great help to lots of other parents.
Helen, as we mentioned, it is National Storytelling Week. Where can people go to find out further information about this, and indeed hashtag Goldilocks?
Well, you can come onto our website, which is www.vodafone.co.uk/digitalparenting, where you can actually download the book for free at the moment. So if people would like to do that or to get any other information, I would encourage them to look there.
And Jean, any plans to actually incorporate any other beloved fairy tales and fairy stories? I'm thinking Hansel and Gretel could be an ideal one for Stranger Danger and such like.
Thanks, I'll take that. I've already done one for Stranger Danger. I've done 3 so far, including hashtag Goldilocks. One was Chicken Clicking, which was about Stranger Danger. There's Troll Stinks, which is about bullying online. And I wrote another one last week, which is called Old MacDonald Had a Phone, which is about getting too addicted to your phone and losing your social life and possibly your mental health as a consequence.
And let's not even talk about the animals, because they'd be very depressed. we'll just progress that. Jean Willis, award-winning children's author, and Helen Lamprell from the Vodafone Foundation. Many, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Old MacDonald Had a Phone. You can make it up. I do believe, though, Emma, you have actually accessed hashtag Goldilocks, so you can let us know what your thoughts were about Jean Willis's work.
Yeah, I quite liked it, actually. I thought it was really clever. I think she was basically so obsessed with trying to get likes on her like Instagram account and things like that that she went to the effort of breaking into the bear's house and photographing all of her antics as she tested out the porridge and the beds and everything, and ultimately that's how she gets caught.
Because she posted it all on social media.
She posted it all on social media, so, and then it all stayed there as well. So, so yeah, I think it was quite clever, really.
Well, the message is quite clearly one that Goldilocks will probably spend a long time coming to terms with. Ben, did you find the whole thing fascinating, or personally, do you think enough already?
It's interesting, but probably not on my street, but I'm sure someone... I'm sure it's Emma Street, you know.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for someone.
It's a whole new theme and a whole new show, which we'll introduce before too long. Down your street, down your way. It's amazing. Up next, Danny Brooks, cybersecurity expert and former undercover police officer. Seems as though we've still got a time in society where there are lots of challenges and, shall we say, unpleasant folk out there, with nearly half of British people ignoring their gut instinct and feeling out of politeness to stay in the company of a date that they no longer wanted to, in order to avoid offending their partner on the date. Despite 88% of singles declaring that trusting your intuition is one of the most important factors when it comes to dating safety, all finding
findings revealed as part of the Safer Dating Report. And to address this particular aspect, which was produced by dating app Plenty of Fish, we're delighted to welcome Channel 4's hunted and celebrity hunted expert. She is basically one superwoman person in all sorts of ways. She's the fabulous cyber officer, security expert extraordinaire, Danny Brook. How are you, Danny?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Very good indeed. But at the same time, somewhat disappointed by this particular finding, which, again, you know, we do need to ensure that in an era where it seems to be so easy to swipe right, swipe left, and so on and so forth, actually you don't want to be putting yourself in danger when you go to engage in cyber dating.
Yes, although I must say this report is incredible. It isn't done, it hasn't been commissioned to cause fear or to take the fun out of dating. I think what Plenty of Fish have done is just try to sort of educate everybody and sort of encourage them just to take a few extra steps. And this report does do that. It just provides a few little simple tools to show people and empower them that they can date online and safely, and it can still be fun. But as you said, the statistics of the people that were spoken to for this report were a little bit difficult when you first saw them.
A quarter of daters feeling concerned for their own safety in the last 12 months. That can't be good.
Well, interestingly, actually, it's over half in East Midlands have felt compelled to stay on their date when they felt uncomfortable, which was a little bit higher than the average. But you're quite right, a quarter did say that they felt concerned for their own safety whilst they were on the date. And I think that goes down to them just not maybe doing the few extra checks before they've gone on their dates, and they've just kind of taken it at face value, which is just something that we Brits do, don't we? We take it on face value. We don't like to upset anybody or cause offence.
Do you think we should return to the days of having a chaperone and actually have a cyber chaperone or something, and maybe an artificial intelligence that could actually go along on a date as well?
I mean, that's a great idea, and a kind of online dating bodyguard. But, you know, you can do that sort of thing anyway just by, like, letting somebody know where you are. If you leave that location and, you know, it could be that the date's going incredibly well and that you move on to another location. Just drop somebody a text, just let them know where you are, or a quick phone call. And then you're covered, you've just got yourself a little extra safety net.
Now, clearly, when it comes to finding people, there's no equal to your good self, Danny. I mean, that's been demonstrated time and time again. This is the kind of reverse of the whole system, but you still need to actually do background checks on people. And what sort of level of investigation would you go into for, or would you recommend that people should be doing, you know, just to make sure that you're not unwittingly connecting with a sociopathic stalker or whatever?
No, of course. I think, you know, basic things, you know, what are their social media platforms? Obviously, it will vary on different people, but what are their social media platforms? You know, are their pictures the same as the ones that are on their profile on the dating site? What are their interests? Are they, again, you know, on a weekend? If they've got cycling on their profile, are they cycling at the weekend, or is it just, you know, is it a ruse? I think name, address, why are they online? What is it they want? Do they want a full-term relationship? Are they just there to date? What is it they want? Images, I mean, you know, lots and lots, you know, you're going to use your best image, aren't you, on your profile. So you could do a little image reversal. It's free. It's very easy. Anybody can do it. That sort of thing. You know, just getting a feel for somebody.
A very important recommendation, of course, is having the date at a known public place. So not necessarily going off to a place that you've never heard of before, which is in the back of beyond.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That will put you at ease as well, which will then, you know, give you room to see the bigger picture rather than being nervous because you're in a different location. But 100% agree. If you can go to somewhere where you know, where you're comfortable and you're happy, it makes complete sense.
Clearly, the other aspect, tell somebody where you're going, with whom you're going, and so on. And I mean, we said it at the start, really, listening to your gut instinct can never be underestimated. I used to say it's the tummy test, basically. If it feels good, go with it. If not, then don't do it at all.
Absolutely. If you're not happy, get out. You know, you don't owe this person anything. Just get out. If you're not happy at all, then, you know, you just need to make yourself safe. And that's paramount in these situations, is your safety and your happiness. You're going there to be happy, and it's supposed to be fun. If the fun's not there, just leave.
Danny, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you kind of stayed in something out of politeness and said, oh, well, what the hey, and then regretted it?
Maybe not politeness, but I was deployed once, yes, in a very awkward situation undercover. and I had to stay because I needed a result to take back to the team. And that was not necessarily politeness, but definitely under sort of duress. And I can definitely say I wish I'd left.
The world awaits the series of Danny Brook movies, which I'm sure is just around the corner. It'll be sort of fascinating from that sort of point of view. But for the moment, as far as this particular survey is concerned with Plenty of Fish, where's the best place to go to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today, Danny?
Absolutely, and that's another good point, actually. It's not just for Plenty of Fish users. It is online. It's on their website, and you can find it at plentyoffish.com/safety.aspx.
You may even be able to go to POF.com if you find Plenty of Fish just far too much to type into your search engine. Danny, it's been great sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Many thanks indeed. Take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. Take care,
Danny. Thanks very much.
It's such a chore whether we can actually identify the kind of oily fish we should be eating, whether it's a case of Plenty of Fish to be aware of stranger danger on websites and various other bits and pieces, or whether it's just a case of fish in general. It's very confusing. It's time to go to our ace culinary award-winning expert, who indeed has updated another Telegraph superlative insight into his website, Why Us Posh Boys Are Partial to a Bit of Mockney, but Never at the Bar of a St. James Club. It is William Sitwell. Good morning, William.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, how is life in the joys of the southwest of the country? Are you seeing snow, or is it a case of, no, we're snow-free?
It's frosty out there.
Well, that's okay. Frosty is...
It's a winter wonderland, but not sparkling with white, which I'm very glad about. I like the snow, but I like it up in the mountains.
Yes.
I've got skis on.
Yeah, very good. Emma is with us, and indeed Ben is with us. Ben, would you like to have a chat with the awesomeness of William Sitwell?
Certainly. William, how are you doing, firstly?
I'm fine. Very well, thank you.
Good. Is there anything we can look forward to the upcoming spring, seasonal, food-wise?
Oh, well, I mean... Spring, when it springs, is one of the great seasons. I mean, it's when the ground starts warming up, when you see the little purple heads pop through the soil of asparagus. I always think they're one of nature's wonders. A bit like, you know, bamboo, but you can eat it because they grow so fast.
I often feel the same about
it. Quite miraculous. And the fact that you plant asparagus as crowns, these sort of little tangled roots that look sort of dead. You can't believe that actually what will happen is you'll get these little spears. And, of course, asparagus that's grown genuinely and properly in English gardens has a very, very short season. And the best thing you can do is make them your own. And I always think that the finest way of cooking asparagus is to put your poaching pan on while you go out into the garden with your knife and cut the asparagus while the water is boiling. And then pop them in the pan and just a dollop of butter, or if you're skilled enough, like someone like Alex, make your own hollandaise sauce. And there is no better dish. And, of course, if you grow your own, they taste better. So I think that spring is exciting for anyone who plants vegetables because they start coming, you know, that wonderful moment when you get your first basket of, you know, if it's coriander and lettuce leaves and so on. Spring or September, you know, often people love September because it's season of, you know, more root vegetables and game. But spring is great when the soil starts warming. So I'm always excited about spring. I might write a piece about asparagus. You inspired me.
Yeah, wonderful. I feel like that's my achievement's done for this year at university.
Exactly.
Inspired, I mean, William to write that feature.
That's a message that could be added to the portfolio in wonderful ways. Emma, are you an asparagus eater?
Yeah, I am. I love asparagus, yeah. With a bit of lamb, yeah.
Yeah, with a bit of lamb, exactly.
Yeah.
When a tart. Asparagus tart is a thing of beauty.
I've never had one of those.
No, I haven't. I'll have to, yeah.
Explore the adventures of an asparagus tart.
Yeah.
Could be a whole read. Do we get a sneak preview in terms of what this Saturday's Telegraph column will be entailing, William? Or is it a case of, no, we can't reveal that until you actually purchase it on the day itself?
Well, I can't actually remember what it is, because I write these things a few weeks in advance. I think it's a place called... Ice, or it's spelled H-I-C-C-E, and it's a place in King's Cross in London.
Oh.
I think it's that one, I think so.
Well, we will find that out. I mean, if you're wondering, why isn't he referred to the whole thing? I was actually poorly in bed this weekend. I didn't even go out to get a copy of the Daily Telegraph, so it's a case of, I know these things are online and such, but I thought, we'll work our way through it. That's the important thing. And how's the book coming?
Well, not bad. I've got to spend more time doing it. I was actually in London yesterday. I had a tour around the Telegraph offices, which are unbelievably impressive. It's wonderful to see a fantastically thriving modern media company. And someone's drilling, trying to get through.
Season. Yeah, exactly. I know. It's, in case you're wondering, it's basically a feature about gentlemen's dreams as they become more advanced in years. Apparently, many pensioners still believe they can be stand-up comedians if they're males. So we'll be following that through in a few seconds. It's with John Leonard from Ultra. Don't worry about it.
Very good. And all the all the journalists are seated around this circular area called the pit, where the editors sit. And then they have their kind of conference rooms and on the edges, and the magazines, you can see them because they're sort of filled with plants and all sorts of, you know, the beauty department is sort of littered with cosmetics and so on. But it's an amazing office, and they have these big screens on the walls where they monitor the progress of every article to see how it's being read online, because, of course, their big push at the moment is to try and get more and more subscribers. So they monitor the success of particular stories, and which you can see on a kind of graph. It's all very interesting how a traditional print newspaper is moving to, you know,
evolving, evolving to the 21st century. Amazing. William, it has been awesome, and I'm going to ask Emma to put those last two questions to you. Go, Emma.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
It's been very quiet, but that's nice.
Yes. will you be joining us again next week?
You asked the big man himself.
More asparagus, no doubt.
You cannot get enough asparagus, to be honest. Not enough asparagus at all. And celery, of course. That's very good.
I don't think anyone's ever sung a song about asparagus, or not one that even you may have known. Not, I thought you know.
Well, we shall have to explore.
Skills on your computer not extend to dialing up an asparagus-related tune.
Come on, I'm sure we can find something.
I mean, I'm asking the question.
I've
opened up the various other bits and pieces there. I doubt, honestly, whether asparagus will be coming through. I suspect we will be going with Cat Stevens and Father and Son.
It's a hard word to rhyme with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious asparagus. No, it's not going to work. We haven't got the Sherman Brothers. The line isn't there.
Okay. I'll come back next week with a rhyme. Rhyming a word that rhymes with asparagus.
That's the cliffhanger.
Perfect.
That is the cliffhanger ending we were looking for.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young. That's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me. I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got. For you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? 'Cause when I do, he turns away. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered.
Yes, but what about those dreams? What about those dreams that effectively you still need to hang on to as you go through your 30s, your 40s, your 50s and 60s? Best person to actually speak to when it starts getting too much to bear and we want to find out more about dreams has to be from Ultra, of course, the fabulous John Leonard. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Now, we talked about this last night on the show. We talked about it a little this morning in terms of the top five dream jobs that women hang on to. They hang on desperately to those dreams, same with respect to men. Although, interestingly enough, the top number one for women who's still a doctor, lawyer, or accountant, whereas, of course, most men still want to be a pop star or vocalist, yeah, as well as comedian and so on. So talk to us about this survey by Ultra and why age is no barrier to success in so many ways, with 9% of British pensioners, yes, Prince Philip, referring to you as well, still believing they've got what it takes to hit the big time.
I think as we all go through life, as we all get older, it's really important that we believe that we can still do things, that we try to still do things, and we do new things all the time, and we constantly sort of challenge ourselves. I think it's important that we've all got that in us, and I think most people have, as the study shows.
Now, this research was commissioned by Ultra Events. Ultra Events itself takes the opportunity of giving people the chance to take up a new activity and raise money for Cancer Research UK, so it's good news from that point of view. But if I'm going to put a fly in the ointment here, can't it be a bit embarrassing sometimes, particularly if you've got a parent who basically, it's a bit like dad dancing and various other things, you say, oh, no, you're not going to be the Antoine de Breck of the, you might think you've got the moves, but just don't go there.
I don't think at all, no. I think it's fantastic for everyone to get up and have a go at doing something incredible. I think you can either sit on the sofa and you can say you can't do it, or you can get up and do your best. And I think it's admirable that people get up and they actually do something. They get fit, they get to do something incredible, take part in a big event in front of their friends. And obviously they all raise money for Cancer Research UK as well.
Okay, so that notion of 13% of men in their 50s believing they could be the new Michael McIntyre would still actually sort of hold fire to, yes?
I think people should always try and do things that a lot of people would say they can't do.
Okay, we've got two fine folk in the studio who are both in their 20s. So decades for their dreams to come crashing down. Let's go to Emma, first and foremost. Emma, any thoughts on what you've been having a look at, or indeed questions for John?
I don't think it's very surprising. I think my dad would picture himself as a comedian. I think I can say that because he's not listening today. So I can say that he thinks he's very funny. But
is that when he's behind the wheel as a chauffeur, or at
oh,
all
no,
time?
No, all serious when he's behind the wheel.
I should hope so.
Yeah, he's it's dad jokes, isn't it? So I think all dads, I think.
Okay, what about your mum? Is she sort of ever set herself to say, oh, I wish I'd actually pursued my dream of becoming a ballroom dancer?
I don't think so. I don't. Right. I don't think I've ever seen her dancing. So,
right.
I suppose you never know, do you? When you haven't been given the opportunities to, or you know, when you, like you said, if you just sit
John,
on the sofa
it strikes me that Emma's mum could be an ideal candidate for this whole experience, really.
Yeah,
you've
got to give it a go.
I think she definitely could. You know, you just said she's maybe not had the opportunity to do it. This is an ideal opportunity. She could sign up. She'll get 8 weeks of completely free training with professional dancing coaches. She'll get to pick her own music, and then she can walk out in front of hundreds of people and show off her skills.
See, I don't think she's
that
like
could be the ideal birthday present, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A birthday's on Sunday.
It is,
this
yeah.
could be the moment.
Certainly be a birthday to remember, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Ben, what about yourself and your own parents, or indeed challenges or thoughts on this little number?
I don't think, personally, they'd be up for it. But, personally, I mean, you know, I can see why some people would. I mean, some people have that dream. Some people have that dream, though. They want to conquer. And, you know, even if it hasn't come true, you know, in their younger years, they still might want to take that up, and I think that's quite nice to see.
And 1 in 20 men in their 30s reckon they could still make it as a professional footballer. Of course, Ben, you were very nearly going to take that path of professional football before you decided to go down the academic route.
Yes. Well, for me, I think it was a tough decision, but ultimately I have made the right decision, thankfully. But I can see, why other people chose to do that route, and people are successful, but it's quite a small percentage of people that do end up going the full way.
I mean, John, you obviously run a successful gym business. You set up Ultra Events. This partnership with Cancer Research UK has raised more than £16 million for the charity. So it's clearly a success message. How could people actually get in contact with your good self, or indeed follow through this whole scenario?
So they can go on to the Ultra Events website, which is ultraevents.co.uk, and then they can see all the different options: ballroom dancing, comedy, boxing, mixed martial arts, adventures. They can see all the different things they can do, and they can simply sign up on the website.
So I'm thinking, Ben, possibly mixed martial arts could be an option you would possibly consider.
You count me as a new sort of Kung Fu Panda. Who knows? I don't know. I'm sure we can. I've never done it before, though, martial arts. That would be a first. Probably last as well.
Is there any criteria that we're looking for, John, in terms of age or category, or is it a case of, you know, you've got to be over a certain age before you could actually have one of these experiences?
So people have got to be over the age of 18. The oldest participant we've ever had in the boxing events is 67.
Oh, wow.
So pretty much any age, you know. Everyone trains together for 8 weeks and they're fairly matched. So at the end of the 8 weeks, you're not going to get a 67-year-old who's put against a 19-year-old Royal Marine. You know, they're going to get a fair competitive...
And that will be entertaining. I mean, after fashion, really.
And a 67-year-old would win.
We've seen the Royal Marines read these recently. It's a thought, definitely a thought. And website to go to, John, in terms of finding out further details about this fabulous Ultra package and so on.
So it's ultraevents.co.uk.
Simple as that. It's fantastic. I mean, John, I think there's lots of things we could actually work through with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme? Has it been good for you, sir?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, it's good to hear different people's opinions and what different people think of the experience and their personal experiences.
So the next critical question, of course, is would you be kind enough to join us again and keep us appraised of how people can make their dreams come true and benefit Cancer Research UK and actually work with Ultra? Will you come back?
Yes, of course. We've got an upcoming event in Lincoln in the next few weeks. Training starts for the next boxing event in about 3 weeks, so we're currently taking sign-ups for that.
It's OK. And whereabouts in Lincoln, by the way?
The event is at the Engine Shed at the university venue, so we're currently taking sign-ups, and then everyone who takes part in that will start their 8 weeks free training. They'll all train together, get super fit, learn to box, raise money for cancer research.
Well,
then
I think we will go. I mean, the Engine Shed is literally about 200 yards away from this very studio. We will come and see you, I think, Ben. Yes?
Indeed.
Fantastic.
Let's make it a date.
It's like jumping back to the 1880s. Daryl Hall, John Oates, You Make My Dreams. Splendid. Many people dream of winning the lottery. Many people rely on lottery wins for future stability. Don't do it. Almost 2 in 5 folks surveyed are aware of being in a family member or friend's will. And of those who know they will receive inheritance, they're relying on that as well to be financially secure in the future. We're going to be talking about inheritance and ways to actually adjust this whole sequence with Andy Lucas from the Cambridge Building Society and David Steele from the Money Charity, who will be providing us with some sensible thoughts from that point of view. Possibly without Ben, because Ben, you might be heading off for a seminar.
I do, yes. In probably about 10 minutes.
Oh, well, there we are. So it's a quick hello and then probably just walk out. So I'm sorry.
And that's it, and then just run away.
Can't cope with this in any way, shape, or form.
Say hello and say goodbye.
Emma, you're clearly with us from that point of view. So that's all great. And a little heads up, of course, next week we'll be exploring a whole range of other sort of adventures with respect to activities that we'll be going on to. I mean, the Dreams one, does that appeal to yourself?
I think it's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about the whole boxing. I don't think I'll be very good at that, but I guess that's the whole point of trying something new. But I don't know. I'm not very good at putting myself in like embarrassing situations. I get embarrassed quite easily. So
I understand that. It's very British. From that point of view. You know, that sort of thing. Do you actually sort of go to the New Theatre or Lincoln to see a fantastic dance performance, or you say, no, I've got to look after my mama? It's a tough call, but never mind. Life will continue. Don't forget, of course, this evening we will be hearing another edition of the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone and David J. Howe. Honestly, the dreams just keep coming on Siren Radio. So putting some numbers on what we've been talking about so far on the production, research of over 2,000 British folk by the Cambridge Building Society has found that almost 2 in 5 of us are aware of being in a family member or friend's will, with almost half of those people relying on it to be financially secure in the future. This is not great. Even more worrying is this notion that 1 in 5 folk are relying on either winning the lottery, gambling, or receiving compensation of some kind for future financial security. So to talk us through some of the findings and issues related to that, from the Cambridge Building Society, we're delighted to welcome, first of all, Andy Lucas. How are you, Andy?
Morning. Very well, thank you, Alex.
And from the Money Charity, David Steele. Good morning, David. How are you, David?
Good morning, Alex. Very
Excellent.
Well.
Excellent. David, if we can come to you first, because clearly, you know, if you're going to be gambling on that basis with respect to futures and so on, you could be heading to really stressful times.
It's a worrying statistic, wasn't it? And although the Money Charity is not a debt charity, we often have discussions about debt in the course of our financial management education. And it's worrying when the number is that high, isn't it? And I think that tells us something about trends in our society at the moment in terms of insecurities in the labour market, you know, the effect of the gig economy, and also the lack of some of the longer-term security structures. For example, the poor coverage of our pension system. You know, even with auto-enrolment, we still have about half a workforce who are either not covered by a pension at all or are saving at a very low level and, you know, not really enough to provide any sort of decent income in retirement. So that really, that stat is really telling us about insecurity, isn't it, in part of our society.
We have two fine folk in the studio, Ben Lewis and Emma Street. Ben, I know you have to leave us shortly, but in terms of thinking about pensions and such, I mean, we were talking last week that when you're working last year and you're year out, you're putting savings aside, etc. Is this something which you kind of start thinking even at 22?
Well, I mean, I did it predominantly mainly if I was to end up back at my workplace there in the future, that I then had something built up already, which, you know, I built up quite a little bit of money for the year I'd worked there. But it's interestingly, I mean, just building on your points, I wanted to see whether you felt it was a societal issue in terms of, do you feel people are responsible themselves to make their own pensions and you know, save themselves, or do you think it's down to sort of local authority to help people plan and actually ensure that they have savings in place for their future?
I think when you look around the world, that your pension saving is notoriously difficult because it's a very long-term thing. You know, you're talking about retiring maybe 40 years or 45 years in the future, and it's very hard for people to plan that properly and to resist all the immediate financial needs that come along. So generally speaking, successful pension schemes are structured by governments to make sure that people are able to put money away and it actually does go away. And our government is moving somewhat in that direction with the auto-enrolment system, which has certainly raised quite dramatically the number of people who are contributing to pensions. But the overall level is still too low. So, for example, this year, the contribution rate is 5%. It'll be going up to 8%. But most pension experts will say to you that you need to be putting aside at least 15%, perhaps even 20%, in order to build up a decent pension pot for the future. So it's very much a structural and policy thing that I think we have to look at as a country as a whole.
Emma, quickly, Emma, are you worried about your own pension from that point of view?
I am now. I guess it's not really something I thought of, and I think maybe, you know, young people need to be a bit more kind of made aware of it, I guess. I don't know.
Andy, is that a point from your own perspective with the Cambridge Building Society that actually women are still lagging behind men when it comes to saving?
Well, I think women are, in terms of saving for, and certainly the research shows, saving for the sort of short-term emergencies, I think women are better than men. But I think in terms of the longer-term saving, and we don't specifically offer pension arrangements, but in terms of encouraging people to have savings that they can draw on in later stages in life, we do see that the women are doing it, but I think they're starting from further back, if you like, and I think actively encouraging women to take their own responsibilities is a really positive thing and certainly something we would endorse. And I think, you know, to reiterate what David said, this part of it is a government and structural thing, but I think also very importantly there's a personal responsibility, and I think it's difficult if we don't know why we're saving. And so sort of having some reason for and a long-term goal that means that actually encourages you to get into the habit and continue doing it is something we're very positively supporting. You know, for nearly 170 years, we've said it's a good thing to save. And obviously, don't save if you haven't got the funds that's going to make you live a difficult life. But actually, for most people, they can normally find a way of just restructuring the way they manage their finances. And in a way, that's why today's, we think, is a good day to be talking about this, because we've got post-Christmas and New Year stress on our finances. And a lot of people probably started the year with some health objectives and financial objectives. And we're saying, look, whatever you can afford to put away for savings is a good thing, both for short-term shocks, but equally for the longer term, and that could well be a pension because of the tax advantages you get with that.
And clearly, saving actually helps you build up the inheritance. It becomes a virtuous circle, as opposed to waiting for people to actually peg out so you can actually inherit what you perceive would be their wealth, which might not be as big as you thought it was in the first place. And there are all sorts of issues with respect to that, which are ethical and moral ones and so on. Where can people go to find out for more of their information, either about the Money Charity or indeed Cambridge Building Society? David, we'll take you first from the Money Charity.
Well, we have a website, themoneycharity.org.uk, and there are various resources on that website, including booklets on budgeting. There's a student finance specialist booklet. We have a budget builder, and we can also channel people. For example, if someone's listening who's in a serious debt situation, we don't ourselves do debt advice, but we know the charities that do, and we can channel people in the direction of charities like Step Change or the Money Advice Trust, who help people deal with debt situations, which, as you know, can be incredibly stressful and damaging to people's mental health.
For the Cambridge Building Society, we'd love you to come and visit us if one of our branches, but if you live slightly further afield, then you can call us up, or perhaps for most people, go online, cambridgebs.co.uk. And there we've got lots of handy tips, hints and guides, and also it explains the sort of range of different products that you can use to save.
Andy Lucas from the Cambridge Building Society and David Steele from the Money Charity. Many thanks indeed, gentlemen. Keep saving.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex. Thank you.
Stay home with all this time to kill. Oh God, I can't sit still tonight. I've gotta make some noise. I'm jumping up and down. Gotta get out now. Gotta shout out loud. Oh, you make me feel right. It's like the topmost high. Oh, it's you. Crack up your bass and give us a smile. Tonight I just wanna be wild. I've got a million thoughts, and when I've thought them all, I'll find a million more tonight. And when I'm feeling sad, you know it's such a drag.
And in our end-of-show roll of honour, we thank Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams from London, Sarah Ann Macklin, nutritionist extraordinaire, Ian Lennox, of course, from Tyneside, Jean Willis, our Ace Children's author, Helen Lamprell from Vodafone, Danny Brook, Ace Cybersecurity expert, William Sitwell, of course, John Leonard from Ultra, Andy Lucas and David Steele, and Ben Lewis, and Emma Street. Emma, have you enjoyed the production?
I have, yeah, it's been really good.
Back again next week?
Oh, yes, definitely.
There we are. We will resume with the Midweek Drive on Wednesday. Midweek Drive Morning Edition, of course, back on Thursday. Stay tuned to some great information and programmes on Siren throughout the day, because it's something we do, really. What should we say now? Lightning season ready or not, taking us out into the far beyond, and then we've got all sorts of other wonderful bits and pieces. Let's say it. Let's say... Happy February. 1, 2, 3.
Happy February.